Hello everyone and welcome to JFG Tonight. So much to talk about tonight. I'm on Truth Social now. I've had access to Truth Social. So somehow you can make it work, although they had this message that was saying subscription restricted for now, but I don't know what I've done, but somehow during the days it changed and it said welcome, you can sign in. And so I've created a Truth Social account. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if it will be a place of free speech. I don't know if, because they say we do not discriminate by political beliefs, but that means you discriminate by other standards. What will be these standards? Can I survive on Truth Social? I don't know. I hope so. At the same time, I don't know if I'm super enthusiastic about the fact that it seems to be a MAGA thing very much, and it doesn't feel like the initial internet where everything was possible. It seems like yet one more platform to foam the MAGA feeling and like getter, all these people around Donald Trump. Can it become a greater thing? This is what I will be testing. I'll be giving the platform a chance. It is working well. Compared to Gab, I find that the interface is slicker. It feels better. If I click, for example, on home, I get the people that I've followed. For now, I followed Dinesh D'Souza, the Babylon Bee, Danielle D'Souza. So these people are random people that I've decided to follow. Charlie Kirk and Real Donald Trump. And we can see Real Donald Trump with 25,000 likes, 11,000 retweets. Are these true counts? Is this currently happening on the Truth Social platform? Maybe. Maybe it's all people who had opened accounts in on their, whatever, their iPhone or something like this. So it seems like a comfortable platform to interact with for now. I'm happy about the appearance. We'll see how it goes in terms of the thinking process of people on there. Will there be a possibility to interact with intelligent people? Will it become an open place, an open marketplace of ID? I don't know. People are talking about potato farming. Grew potatoes 10 years ago, says Dino Legovic. Easy as, just buy some you like and put them in the dark and wait for the eyes to appear. Cut them accordingly and add soil and water and sunlight. Yes, that's pretty much what potato farming is. Go away, says, but can I say the N-word on Truth Social? Asking for a friend. My impression is that you can't. But we'll have to see as we use the platform more and more what will happen with it. Today I'll be talking about the IHR and the... because Tucker Carlson has been talking about the pandemic treaty. And people have claimed that they've debunked him, you know, the fact checkers of the mainstream media. We'll see what was true in this and what's wrong. But there is definitely a worry about the expansion of the powers of the WHO, especially given how bad the handling of the pandemic has been, how contrary to individual rights it has been. Therefore, any expansion of the capacities of international systems is to be cared for. One moment. Durs says, what about mushroom farming? Mushroom is much more complex because you have to cultivate the spores first in a sterile environment, and then you have to farm the mushrooms, and it's a matter of humidity control, ventilation. That's the key. Belgian monkeypox outbreak linked to fetish festival. Yesterday I talked a little bit about the monkeypox. I said don't be worried too much. It seems that the emerging facts around the world are that the monkeypox epidemic that is currently spreading across the world is related to sexual behaviors. It seems to have preferably attacked people who have been in contact with the gay community. This is a fetish festival that describes itself as all sorts of gay fetish community preferences like leather, rubber, army, skinhead, and puppies. So those are the fetishes. They like a certain thing in sex. And it seems that even in developed nations, because I think it comes originally from Africa, but even in developed nations, we are seeing gay festivals being at the center of the spread here. So that might be a problem. Of course, you're never going to get the health agencies start saying, hey, let's address the problem here. The problem is gay people traveling and having sex with others in other nations. Let's ban this. You're never going to have them consider this for a second. And yet it's what they've done to us. It's what they've done to everyone. So when you do it to everyone, it's okay, but you cannot do it just for the gays, even if the facts seem to indicate that it is the community currently threatened by it. Biden admin places $119 million order for monkeypox vaccines as virus hits US. One moment. Ah, I have to clear my voice a lot today, I think. Go away, says Jeff. How do we know that these festivals aren't being targeted by crazy right-wingers intentionally spreading the virus there? Well, because if you were to hang out throughout the night at the gay festival for fetish, Belgium fetish fans, I think that would make you not a right-winger, okay? No matter what it is that you do there, even if you're there for spreading viruses, I don't think that qualifies you as a right-wing person. So I don't think we can accuse the right-wing here. So Biden is ordering monkeypox vaccines to prepare for the epidemic. After the first case of monkeypox in the United States this year was confirmed in Massachusetts on May 18. Monkeypox, a viral disease typically limited to Africa, has been reported in several countries with more than 25 confirmed cases since the beginning of May. Denmark-based biotech group Bavarian Nordic announced the order on May 18, which prompts the company to convert its bulk liquid smallpox vaccine into freeze-dried versions, which have an improved shelf life. The bulk vaccine has already been manufactured and invoiced under previous contracts with the US government. Look, I'm not going to take this vaccine. Dino Legovic says, lol, monkey magic. Is is that the name that you propose to call the vaccine? Monkey magic. No, look, with the amount of such vaccines that have led to side effects, and some of them, I don't know the particular path to make these vaccines, but some vaccines spread the disease. You know, some vaccines, like the live, what was it? The live polio vaccine had more victims from the vaccine than from the natural wild virus at some point in time. So, no, I'm not going to get the monkeypox vaccine. I'd rather live in a bunker if I have to. Mama JF is coming to get some stuff in the food reserve. My God, we are in a food emergency. NYC reports first suspected monkeypox case as WHO convenes emergency meeting. Officials in New York City say they are monitoring the state's first suspected case of monkeypox in a patient receiving care at Bellevue Hospital, where preliminary tests have been performed to confirm the disease, according to the Wall Street Journal. Dino Legovich says Canada purchases 300 million doses. That sounds exactly like Canada. Ordering for more doses than the number of citizens you have, that sounds totally like Canada. And then they end up having to convince you of taking the fifth and sixth booster shot because they have so much of it. That totally sounds like Canada. By the way, later in the show, when we're done with the basic news, then we'll move to the IHR and the Global Pandemic Treaty. And finally, I will address this this video, White People Do Not Exist, by Hassan Piker, May 18, so that's 2 days ago. Hassan Piker wants to get into the whole denial of race thing. Well, that deserves a review by Papa JF. There is no such video that can be published without me reviewing it and explaining why it's wrong. So we'll be doing all this today. If you'd like to support the show, click the dollar button below the regular chat. The Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite platform for receiving support and receiving your questions. Alternatively, if you don't like Odyssey, you can use Entropy. The link is in the description below. Go away, says JF. Are all these deadly diseases basically natural selection selecting against globalism? Perhaps human societies filled with people who have globalist preferences are doomed to fail from disease. You could see it that way. I think it's a hard case would have to be made to make the case that this has yet an evolutionary effect already. Because the fact is, most young people don't die from any of these diseases. So, and therefore, people get to their age of reproduction generally without having been put in trouble by these viruses. So these viruses tend to cull the old and the weak and the malnutritioned. So the malnourished. So I think that the evolutionary effect probably hasn't shown up fully for globalism as a whole. However, you could think that just having a small effect, just, you know, out of the 10,000 kids, one of them will die. Maybe the kid that dies is more likely to have globalist parents. And so, yes, you could think that this will eventually sum up to an evolutionary effect. Mountains of grain left to rot as Vladimir Putin blackmails the world. So there's lots of food available in Ukraine, but the Ukrainian ports are blocked by the war. So it seems that there will be lots of loss of food. That's a consequence of the war. Nothing surprising. Meanwhile, the ruble, it's a 7-year high as gas buyers bow to Putin's payment mandate. On Friday, the ruble surged to the highest level in 7 years against the euro, thanks in large part to the Putin-ordered mandatory conversion of foreign currency by export-focused company. Look at this. At the beginning of the Russian crisis, a drop of the value of the ruble and back to where it was at 2014. Russia has never been in such a strong position in the last decade. It is in a very strong position right now. And despite all of the hate, all of the sanctions, they seem to be set to survive it and in fact to thrive in it. A Buffalo supermarket worker dialed 911 during the massacre and was asked, "Why are you whispering?" Now the dispatcher is set to be fired. So apparently during the shooting at the Buffalo supermarket, the Tops supermarket, there was a 911 dispatcher who answered, and she was saying, Latisha Roger, that's her name. Latisha Roger, oh no, she's an employee of the Buffalo supermarket, where 10 people were killed last week. And So the person calls the 911 dispatcher, and the 911 dispatcher is like, you don't have to whisper, they can't hear you. And the guy is like, no, there's a shooting. And the 911 dispatcher is like, oh, don't worry, speak clearly, they can't hear you. What do you know about it? How do you know this? Unbelievable. The dispatcher's incompetence here could have resulted in death. Thankfully, it didn't. But we need competent dispatchers. Lodazal says, heard a few dispatchers treat the dying callers rudely the last few years. Yeah, I think there's general incompetence, and I guess it goes with the shortage of intelligence in our society and the shortage of workers added on top of it. Elon Musk has announced that, of course, we covered this on the show. He has announced that he was voting Republican. And ta-dum, 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 of course, you expect, if the machine is well-oiled, you would expect the sexual allegations to come against him within 48 hours, and they came. A SpaceX flight attendant said Elon Musk exposed himself and propositioned her for sex. Documents show the company paid $250,000 for her silence. Well, that's how Business Insider lays it out. However, Fox News shows that SpaceX CEO has denied the sexual assault claim and called the story a politically motivated hit piece. It's like this. If you've been hanging in leftist circle and suddenly you announce that you're right wing, you're gonna get the exes getting together, the woman, your current girlfriend, the family courts, everyone will just dump on you all at once. And you're gonna get false allegations of sexual assault. So apparently this case was a flight attendant, a woman who was offering masseuse services as part of her flight attendant duty, and she says that Elon Musk would have exposed his penis to her and would have kind of talked about sex or propositioned her. I'm not sure what that means. Elon Musk replies the tattoo defense. Elon Musk says, if you've seen my dick, then you should be able to say something that is very unique about this dick and that no one knows publicly. And you won't say it because you've never seen my dick. That's an interesting defense. It puts all sorts of images in my mind. Now I have to... I had it actually circulating in the back of my head all day. What is the distinctive feature of Elon Musk's penis? not a pleasant rotational thought in my mind, but that is the defense for which he opted to go. He tweeted about it. He says, there is a distinctive something about my penis, but you've never seen it, so you won't be able to ever. You have to be careful about this defense, though, because sometimes she could coordinate with an ex of him, and she could know. She could know what is that distinctive feature. Anyway, so basically, it boils down to this: a potential exposition of the penis of Elon Musk. And people are hashtagging this Elon Gate. Rodi Lacid says Elon Gate. Yes, Elon had already been requesting in the past that if ever there was a scandal happening about him, that that it should be called Elon Gate, and that's exactly what's happening. Elon's request has been fulfilled. A Clinton campaign hoax. Musk says 2016 Hillary tweet absolutely disinformation, asks Parag to weigh in. So Elon Musk continues his taunting of the Twitter administration. He says what Hillary Clinton has been saying as part of the Russia bullshit. That was That was bullshit. That was misinformation. Computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert server linking the Trump Organization to a Russian-based bank. Absolutely debunked. Absolutely false. Why is that not being attacked by the Twitter rules? They've designed all of these rules to address any time a Democrat was getting attacked. They even invented the whole rule around computer hacking to protect Hunter Biden. What's the new rule that will protect Donald Trump from these claims that we know to be false? Go away, says JF. She could say anything because we don't know what Elon's penis looks like. He will have to release the dick pics eventually. Well, if she was to say anything, Elon could disprove the claim by sending pics. Stream is perfect, says Lodazal. Well, I'm happy to hear this. We've been working hard to get Odyssey on track, to cheer for them, for their programming team to improve, and I think we've reached a totally acceptable point. So now I'll be on Truth Social, just truthing my show every night, and you can truth me and learn about the truth on my show, starting now. There is a super chat. Sends $5. Thank you so much. He says, given that aliens are back in the current narrative, are you afraid of catching alien pox? Apparently it makes your index finger grow very long and glow white at the tip. A vax is in production by Gates. Yes, a lot of people are laughing at Bill Gates because Bill Gates had been preparing the world for... I've been digging a lot in the conspiracy sphere around COVID. Of course, I've had to do so for many years now. But lately, I will tell you what, they've convinced me of certain things. Like Bill Gates, there's an interview of him. I didn't keep the link, I should have. But there's an interview of him where he's with Melinda. And he's like, the current pandemic has not been taken very... He's not talking about COVID here. He's talking about a pandemic before COVID. And he says, the current pandemic hasn't been taken seriously, but this will change for the next one. And Melinda is like... I mean... Bill Gates had it in his plan to make the COVID pandemic what it turned out to be. I'm not accusing him of tweaking the virus himself, but my God, did he know that things would change in how governments address respiratory viruses? I mean, he was laughing at it. He was like, we got something for you. And also about the monkeypox, they've been talking for more than a year now. Bill Gates has been talking about how we have to prepare for smallpox, a smallpox attack, a smallpox epidemic. People were sharing this on the Discord today. Bill Gates warns of smallpox terror attacks and urges leaders to use germ games to prepare. November 4th, 2021. And the conspiracy theorists have looked at these germ games. They are like simulation activities. And one of the simulation involved a fictitious scenario in which on May 15th, 2022, the outbreak of smallpox would start. And this is exactly the day when they started talking about monkeypox. So to what extent is that training? To what extent is that pressuring the world to be headed in a direction that will benefit the big pharmaceuticals or the groups that furnish these masks and these different vaccines and stuff like this? I mean, I think that the conspiracy theorists are right on target here. There is a big game being played with the world, being played with a naturally occurring phenomenon, which is that there are viruses. There are viruses running around the planet Earth, and it's always been so. Meanwhile, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla explains Pfizer new tech to Davos crowd: ingestible pills, a pill with a tiny chip that sends a wireless signal to relevant authorities when the pharmaceutical has been digested. Imagine the compliance, he says. Are you kidding me? Let's play it.
Basically, biological chip that it is in the tablet. And once you take the tablet and dissolves into your stomach, sends a signal that you took the tablet.
Of course, Twitter video doesn't work because it's Twitter video. Let's refresh the screen. Unbelievable. Twitter video systematically does not work. It's not a video platform. If every time you play a video, it doesn't play, you fail at being a video platform. Let's re-listen to it now that I've refreshed. Hopefully, it will load. Meanwhile, Go Away says most of Alex Jones' predictions come from reading the white papers of globalist institutions. They pretty much always just put their plans right out there for everyone to read. Well, anyway, Twitter video doesn't work, so let's leave this on the side and let's start talking about IHR and the Global Pandemic Treaty. So Tucker Carlson has been talking about it recently. It's been around the internet. People have been worried about the pandemic treaty for many months now. And people have been sending me messages and I was like, okay, maybe maybe something is going on with this. Tucker Carlson talked about it on his show. And he claimed that, as many claim, that this is a surrendering of state authority to a globalist entity. And it's often what happens, you know, states, they have in principle all the power. The Constitution protects all of the activities of the government. But a government decides to surrender some control to an outside organization. One example of this is NATO. NATO, in a way, by its language around obligatory war, if one member of NATO is attacked, the other members have to respond. It's kind of removing the power from the president. Now, ultimately, a president could say, well, I'm not supporting you. I'm breaking my obligations in NATO because I don't believe in the signature of it. But in practice, what happens is that governments end up being kneeling in front of those global powers. And that's a problem if we start doing this in the health domain, because the health domain now has been used as an excuse for impeding on individual rights, right to travel, right not to be vaccinated, right to immigrate. Why Tucker Carlson is wrong about the World Health Organization and its pandemic treaty. So this is an article that claims to debunk Tucker Carlson's initial statement. Now, what's the debunk about? Well, they say he's confusing two things. He's calling it the Global Pandemic Treaty, but it's really the International Health Regulations, IHR. And that's like a detailed debunk. It really doesn't matter because the two will be voted for and implemented by the WHO. So whether you call it pandemic treaty or IHR, if the content of what he reveals is what comes to be, then it's worrying for individual rights. But in any case, let's look at both the pandemic treaty and the IHR. So what are the status on this? The IHR, the vote for IHR updates, the IHR updates have been requested by the United States. So IHR is a set of regulation that has been in place for many years now. And the United States have asked for the regulations to be updated, specifically in response to the COVID pandemic, seeing what has not been sufficiently addressed in... My God. Have they... What is happening with the internet? Every time I try to refresh something, it's bugged. I'm gonna have to open a new window to load that PDF. I want to show you the content of the update. So the conspiracy sphere and the medical liberty sphere have been alarmed at these changes, both of the IHR and the pandemic treaty. So the pandemic treaty, we don't have a draft. The pandemic treaty is something that would come in the future months, and it has not been revealed publicly yet. However, we do have an idea of what will be in it, because the WHO has displayed on the public space their intent concerning this treaty. So it's basically a treaty that will be removing the central position of states as the decision makers, and rather build this entity, the WHO, which already exists, but which will designate the WHO as determining whether a country is compliant enough to their request. And the updates to the IHR are also in line with this, in that they... Well, it seems that I'm not going to have access to the PDF. I had loaded it and it was right there in my face, but just clicking refresh, it's not showing up anymore. That's like a Google Chrome bug of some kind. Or perhaps I had my IP address in... No, it seems I will not be able to show you guys. What if I open a new window? New window. No, my... Well, that sucks, really, because that was the theme of my show. What should I do? Should I take the risk of totally closing Google Chrome? Or maybe if I open Microsoft Edge? I use Edge sometimes. Oh yeah, there it is. Edge working. Well, shit. Microsoft Edge is working. Okay, so this is getting voted on by the WHO in the next 7 days. And no, I certainly do not want to set Edge as the default browser. Thank you. This is getting voted on in the next 7 days. And there are proposed amendments to the international health regulations, whose last update had been 2005. So initially, many decades ago, the IHR was enacted for just six diseases. They were big diseases of the time. In 2005, it has been updated to cover any disease that is of global interest. And in 2022, we are currently faced with the proposition from the United States to expand. And everything that's underlined here is an addition. So here they add a mechanism for periodical review of what the WHO is doing and how it's performing. Okay. There are a lot of places where they add basically a time condition. The WHO must respond quick to pandemics. Okay, that will make the WHO probably more invasive in terms of state sovereignty. It will make the WHO invade the individual rights quicker and influence local politicians quicker. And then they add genetic sequence data to the kind of information that the WHO must gather when there's a pandemic. Now you have to know a lot of the language in this in these laws is around when there's a pandemic, an emergency. Now, you have to know that there's always a pandemic. If you want to go by the definition of the who can decide what a pandemic is, they could decide that the flu is a pandemic, and basically all of the powers that are given to the WHO right now will be permanent, because there is not a point in the history of humanity where there are no pandemics. There's always a pandemic of HIV, there's always a pandemic of flu, there's always pandemics of coronavirus. So you have to be careful about giving powers only in the case of a pandemic, and then whoever decides what a pandemic is ends up attributing these powers to themselves. Me Too says on the regular chat, hello, watching JFG tonight on 30 minutes delay instead of watching the catch-up version for a change. It is easier to do that than pay any attention to the people of the chat and miss what JF is saying. Well, that's a big fan of JF. He wants per JF. He's not happy with the dilution that is made when the regular chat engages and talks to me and talks between one another. This guy wants per JF. Well, you got it, sir. You can totally do that. Going forward with the changes, again, within 24 hours of receiving information. So these changes to the IHR will make the WHO more speedy. They will have to decide within 24, 48 hours whether a state is compliant or not. Here they have deleted a passage that was saying, before taking any action based on such reports, the WHO shall consult with and attempt to obtain verification from the state party in whose territory the event is allegedly occurring. So see, there was this aspect that the WHO had to ask for permission first. Like if there's a pandemic in China, the WHO has to write to China and, hey, what do you think about this? We think there's a pandemic in your country. What do you think about it? Now the WHO will be a completely independent entity, does not have to consult or ask for any permission. This is why I've never been with the whole MAGA crowd that was saying, oh, the WHO mismanaged its interaction with China. You see, I've never been bringing this as a major point, because I knew what was behind. If you claim that the WHO should have had more power over China, you also claim that the WHO should have more power over America. And that's where the center right has totally fallen for the anti-Chinese discourse in this. They've been saying, oh my god, look at this, there, China is hiding things to the WHO. Well, what's the problem? Shouldn't the American government be able to hide things to hostile foreign global entities? That's why I've never taken issue with China hiding things, at least to the WHO. You could argue, okay, maybe China has done things wrong with respect to communicating with other nations. But I will never be alarmed at the fact that someone has not communicated something with the WHO, because I don't think the WHO is a legitimate authority. This is where the difference lies between me and your average Charlie Kirk center-right type of thinker who goes after China every occasion they have. I think of the position of America. When I see how we will treat China, I see eventually how we will end up treating ourselves with respect to these global entities. New addition, well, 24 hours addition, 48 hours addition. There's lots of changes that relate to, instead of the WHO may immediately share with other state parties, it is now the WHO shall. So there's a lot of obligations that the WHO used to have as an option, but that are now becoming, under this new law, an obligation for the WHO. So the WHO will have to, the World Health Organization will have to share information with all of the other states when they are alarmed at the behavior, the lack of collaboration of a given state. So the way it will work is the WHO within 48 hours has to establish whether the country that they're dealing with is collaborative. If they are not collaborative, they have to send a letter to the all of the other countries with all of the information they have on the situation. So basically, they're turning the WHO into a denunciator of lack of kneeling to the globalist medical tyranny. This is dramatic because a lot of political leaders who increasingly have no balls, they will find themselves just doing what the WHO demands because they won't want to be highlighted in a letter by the WHO. You'll need someone like Trump, basically, not to do what the WHO says. But all of the other leaders, Canadian types of leaders, with zero balls, they will all do what the WHO asks. Because within 48 hours, the WHO has to send a letter. If you have not fully collaborated with them, they have to send a letter to all the other countries. Silver Spider says, JF, who do you consider a legit authority? Ha! I consider no legit authority other than the self. I consider that the self can decide pragmatically and locally to submit himself willingly to an authority. For example, I submit myself to the United States Constitution, at least when I live in America, when I live in the US. So I consider that there are no legitimate authority other than those that you have abandoned yourself and that you have chosen yourself. So when you decide to live in America and you say, I accept these principles like the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, then that's a legitimate authority. But there is no legitimate authority without consent of the governed. All right. They make a little addition here where the WHO will not only work on the information that they obtain, but they will also use the information in the public domain. That's an update due to the internet age. The WHO determines... So that's a paragraph about verification, assessment, and assistance purposes. So they add a condition, which is the WHO determines that it is necessary that such information be made available to other states' party to make informed, timely risk assessments. So there used to be more requirements. Now they're saying the WHO, if the WHO believes that they have to share something with other countries, they should. So that's giving a lot of discretion to the WHO to decide, when do I write a letter? When do I declare this is a risk worth addressing? And someone was joking earlier, will the WHO declare a porn pandemic? Under these laws, they could very well, because there's no limit here for communicable disease. As far as I can see, it's health risk of a global that have a global impact and global interest. So suffice to bring a little bit of porn in those corners of the world, I guess, that don't have internet yet, and you could say that porn is a worldwide problem. You could totally have the WHO abuse some of the language in there to determine that, okay, there's a porn epidemic. Now, I know that the Andrew Torba of this world would be super happy about it, the little Catholics, prude boys of Nick Fuentes and the others. But yeah, you could have more than just transmissible viruses. The language doesn't seem to be limited to this. And finally, where an event has not been determined to meet the criteria for a public health emergency of international concern, but the Director General has determined it requires a heightened international awareness. So here they develop a principle of the WHO now being able, without without declaring a pandemic and a public health emergency, they can start coordinating with the state. So that there's kind of this intermediate level of we have to start developing laws about this, and we have to start restricting travel about travel of that type, but it's not yet a public health emergency. So it's an intermediate determination here that is now open to the WHO. In implementing health measures pursuant to these regulations, state parties shall make reasonable efforts taking into account relevant international law to ensure that the travel restrictions, blah, 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 do not unduly prevent the movement of healthcare workers. So basically, that's why you will have anytime a country is kneeling to the WHO, it's going to be like, we're going to prevent the movement of everyone except the nurses. And same thing here, everyone, all of the supply chains could be blocked, but not the supply chain for the manufacture and transport of essential medical products. So it's a takeover of the kind that we've seen with COVID. It's a full takeover of society, an elimination of independent business. And if you don't work to the war effort against the pandemic that was declared by the WHO, then there will be blockades, there will be restrictions enacted against you, which is absolute nonsense. Societies do not exist to serve the health imperatives of a globalist system. Societies exist for themselves. Artemis sends $25. Thank you so much. He says, come on, guys. Yesterday there was no super chat, and I'm not seeing any today either. I can't be the only one to chip in. Would be great if people had questions for our own personal PhD to answer. If you have any doubt in life, JF can help. Think of questions ahead of time and send super chats, please. Well, that is very appreciated, Artemis. We did have a super chat earlier by Send Some, but it was on entropy. But thank you for the fanaticism here and for this appeal to the people. And there is a new section in the creation of a compliance committee. So the compliance committee is not a legal entitled committee. They're not going to be able to do much. So it's not like it abolishes your constitutional rights as many have been proposing, or many have been fearing this. But the compliance committee, what it will do is, it will basically declare this country has not been complying with our diktats. And it's going to tell that to the other countries. The problem of this compliance committee is that the decision about whether something should be done about the law, about restrictions, about an emergency, should be totally in the hands of politicians, if it should exist at all. I, as a libertarian, I don't believe that such powers should exist at all. But if they are to exist, they should be severely limited by the capacity of democracy and of due process and of the judicial branch of government to punish the people who act in contradiction to the interest of the general population. If you have the WHO being able to determine you have not been compliant with our orders, then what? Well, then nothing first. So there, it's not like the WHO has an army or whatever. But here's the problem. If you end up having a letter of non-compliance, then you have other countries justified in pressuring your government. So they'll say, hey, Canada has been acting wildly. They've not been blocking their truckers, they've not been force vaccinating. How about we enact some trade punishments, some sanctions on Canada for not doing this? So you have this whole technocratic circle of pressure and extortion that's being deployed here through this compliance committee. So the compliance committee, the fact checks and the debunkers have been reviewing this and say, oh, this committee has no power, countries could decide not to listen to it. I'm not worried about countries not being able to decide to not listen to it. What I'm worried about is what when countries decide to comply. That is a denial of rights. That is a denial of democracy. And that is abandoning your power, your decision-making, to that of a global entity with its own interest. And as was pointed out by the Brownstone Institute, and they've been analyzing more the pandemic treaty, but unfortunately the pandemic treaty, I don't have a draft of it because it's not yet available. But they say, the WHO proposes to expand the mechanism that enabled the response to COVID, diverting unprecedented resources to addressing what, in terms of history and disease, are rare and relatively low-impact events. This will greatly benefit those who also did well from the COVID-19 outbreak, but has different implications for the rest of us. To address it calmly and rationally, we need to understand it. And they point out there's a lot of people who will benefit from a bad WHO decision. What if the WHO starts imposing masks at every flu wave? What if the WHO starts enforcing vaccination with punitive measures against freedom of business? There's going to be people cashing in on this. And that's why I object to these international regulations to have existed in the first place. And we should totally combat their updating right now, because it's nothing else than the encoding of all the violations of rights that have already been done during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's the systematization of it using an international system that operates above the political order of nations. That's how I would oppose to it, rather than just say, oh, it's going to eliminate your constitutional rights. It's a little more complex than this, and when you go with this simple interpretation, you are open to fact-checking and debunking, and they're going to say, oh, no, it's just a committee. It has no power over you technically. Yeah, the problem is it has no power over me technically, but it's going to use all of its influence to impact my life. And don't tell me that the female politician, Minister of Health, will not be following exactly what the WHO requests. Because, of course, she doesn't want to be called a non-compliant person. Cameron Mahon sends 50 LBC. Thank you so much for the support. He says there is a company that separates male and female sperm cells with a machine so you can determine the sex of your baby. Is selecting sperm cells for the ideal genes a revolutionary phenotype? No, it is not. And it's been done in China, you know, sexual selection. They've not done it with the machine, but they were doing it the old way by just sometimes getting more abortion when it's of a given sex or things like this. So it's not a revolutionary phenotype because it's still an event of selection. And in fact, it's a bad event of selection. In other words, you wouldn't want to do this if you want to care for your evolutionary success, because no matter where the society is headed in terms of increasing more males or increasing more females, you are playing the game of evolution against your own odds. You are handicapping yourself if you go the way that the society goes. Because if there's more males, you end up with all of the males are competing for a restricted number of females. And same thing for females. If there are more females, the females are competing between one another for a more restricted set of males. So those are not good decisions to make evolutionarily. And you might think, oh, Jeff, but what in a society that allows polygamy? Then if it allows polygamy in an asymmetric way, what if, for example, females are getting four males each? Or what if each male is getting four females each? Then would that be in the advantage of the parent to go for the more rare or more common sex? The answer is no. because even in the society that restricts one male to four females, the male that gets chosen is the parent of each of the children. So his evolutionary success is multiplied by four, but the females are picking from a larger pool of male than what they need. In a society where each male has four females, people tend to forget there's three males that are incels. So if you were to go for the rare sex, if you were to go for the male sex, you might very well end up having a child who will be an incel. So the equilibrium is always at 50-50 male-female. No matter how you calculate it, no matter what's the circumstance of life and whether there's polygamy or no, evolution always converges back to 50-50 male-female. Because precisely, even in those societies where you can have multiple mates, the more mates you can have, the more incels you created in society. And you could not know as a parent whether you'll end up with the successful male or the incel male. So you'd be playing the probability game still at 50-50. So no, we shouldn't do it, but we shouldn't do it for the reason I just laid out. It's not a phenotypic revolution, because a phenotypic revolution demands that the thing that starts reproducing is separate from your genes. In your case, you are still reproducing with your genes, you're just imposing a very unnatural evolutionary pressure to it. It seems that Artemis' call for super chats has been heard. Fractal Man has sent a super chat also. He says, is there evolutionary basis for the fear people have of public speaking? We see this fear in action every time you hold an AMA. As to Artemis super chat, I lurked for a while without contributing, but I'm glad to subsidize others now that I can. Yeah, I think a fear of public speaking is totally present, and it makes sense evolutionarily. I mean, what are the chances that you'll improve your circumstance in the world by publicly speaking? Almost zero, I mean. People will dump shit over your head as soon as you try to become some kind of a leader. People are going to call out your errors. They're going to take you for the worst that you've said rather than the best. So yeah, evolutionarily, definitely there's an advantage to the sheep. Mama JF is here. What's up, Mama JF?
I'm sorry, but about the thing that you were talking about, the Hulu.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it's almost like, it's almost inevitable that this will happen. It's like, because like, there's a free market, okay? There's one guy who's clever, he become rich.
Uh-huh.
After, when you become rich, you become evil.
Yes.
It changes people. People said that, like, oh, I changed since I'm rich. After, he will say, oh, I'm so rich, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna tell all my friends to become all the leaders of all the other countries.
Yes.
And then all the people who do politics, it's just the most big ass liquor people.
Yes.
Who do everything, and their life was so straight line, and they do everything. Again, I'm sorry, but it's almost like it's meant to be like this, authoritarian, totalitarian, global empire.
Yes.
It's almost like a mechanism.
I agree with you. It's mechanized, and it's almost certain that it has to happen. But then the weaknesses of this system can lead to its own crumbling, and that's where liberty can rise again.
Yes. But it's like, it's almost like God made this like this.
Well, yeah, it's the physical universe is just like this. It's like infinite parasitism and parasitism over parasitism and control over control over control until it doesn't hold.
Okay, but my God, because seriously, even if like you and me, let's say we would stop all this, like, we would just talk it
yes.
out of those people.
Yes.
Giving then we would just die. It would just happen again.
Yes.
You know what I just thought about? It's almost like the Bible, okay? Like all the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, it crumbles.
Yeah.
Maybe actually this is a cycle. It always happens.
Yeah, I think you could interpret things like Dino's arc as being an early theory of environmental cycles and how just a little bit of animals get saved by the Noah's Ark and they repopulate the Earth. It was kind of an early expression of a kind of evolutionary mechanized view of survival.
The Noah's Ark?
Yeah, you know the Noah's Ark, the idea that he's taking the animals of the Earth, put them on an ark, and then there's a flood that kills everyone, and then only these animals have survived.
Yes.
The same will happen with the controllers of the world, with the authoritarians. They will eventually be flooded by their own improductivities.
Yes. And like the apocalypse.
Yes.
And it's almost sure that it already happened many times with this.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so inevitable that it happened like this. Because it's like, it's almost like made for this.
Yeah, I see the history of humanity as a kind of seasonal rhythm of there are forces that push in a direction, forces that push in the other direction, and eventually the whole system moves one way or the other. You know, while the seasons are happening and we're all seeing that the winter is cold and the summer is hot, yet the whole temperature can shift slowly year after year toward colder or hotter, while the rhythm keeps continuing. And I think that authoritarianism and libertarianism are two beating seasons of the human civilization. And our society is currently on the move toward authoritarianism, but you can fight back as part of the libertarian season. Silver Spider sends a super chat. Thank you so much, you guys, for supporting the show tonight and being so generous. He says, hey, JF, why is it that since Europeans have learned about evolution and genetic differences between groups, they have typically had less in group preference than when they were more religious? Shouldn't this be the opposite? Yeah, so they have had less in group preferences. So you describe Western civilization as becoming less tribal as they discovered evolution. That's an interesting thought. I wouldn't say for sure there's something there. Maybe we were always cocked and all that was needed is a couple of plane capacities, the ability to travel around the world, and our cookery eventually found a kind of demand, the demand of immigration. So you could have this theory of European civilization that basically we were always too kind, always too open, always too subject to parasitism, but it took a world that was able to exploit that parasitism, and that world came just out of random, came about 100 years after Charles Darwin, you know, or something like this. You could have this view, but your view is interesting also. So imagine that the discovery of the theory of evolution and of all the genetic discoveries that we've done, imagine that the sum of this would have had a psychological effect. You could imagine that it had the effect of making us more disgusted at the idea. Maybe there are things that when you do them explicitly, they are more disgusting. And when you do them implicitly, it just goes with the flow. That's a possibility. I think in the social world, there are many things like this. Take love, for example. I mean, romance. So anyone who's a little bit autistic like me will know what I'm talking about, but you cannot list out the mechanisms of love and romance to a woman while you're trying to charm her. You know what I'm saying? You cannot be at your first dating dinner and say, all right, so now you want me to talk about my job, I guess, because you need to evaluate me as a proper mate for the purpose of evaluating the quality of my gene to determine if I will inseminate you tonight. If you say that kind of stuff, the woman will just run. And that's an example of when things become explicit, human cognition hates it sometimes. And there are all sorts of touchy subjects in humanity that you cannot mechanize. You cannot mechanize love, you cannot mechanize romance, you cannot mechanize death. like, if you talk of death in a insensitive way, someone will tell you that you don't make sense. So perhaps tribalism is such that once it is said, the human cognition doesn't like it anymore. And doesn't, once the human cognition has been, the light of human attention has been directed toward this entity, suddenly you cannot do it anymore. And suddenly, in fact, you want to act in every possible way so as not to do it. Perhaps it's like this, but it's a long shot and it's a psychological explanation, which I don't like to begin with, but well seen. I think it could be the case. Artemis has sent a super chat. He says, this show is really good. Looking forward to it every day. I spend money on useless stuff all the time. Today I spend $35 on a stupid dating website membership. I spend money on restaurants when I could cook. Yesterday I paid $30 for some dude to cut my lawn, etc. We take this show for granted. Well, it is true. I do need the support, but you guys have been so generous and we have the Subscribestar, the Patreon, and the sales of the book that keep me alive, combined with you guys' super chat, I've been able to make a living from my thoughts and my words since 2017, and it's a great honor. And I thank you, Artemis, for propping up the super chat option. This is a fascinating Red Ice coverage. human trafficking and a casting couch in the dissident right. So our friends from Red Ice TV are covering this live stream, which happened between people. I know some of these girls, of course. I know Lauren Sutton. I know Brittany Venti. I don't know this girl and this girl. Ashton, I've seen her. I've heard of her. I'm not sure who she is, but so they were talking about the dissident right, and Lauren Sutton says there is sexual exploitation in the dissident right. There is a casting couch in the dissident right. And my comment on this and Red Ice TV are hilarious because they review this live stream and they call it for the bullshit that it is. But both Ashton and Lauren Sutton are claiming that there is some kind of casting couch, meaning they had to suck dicks to become celebrities in the dissident right. And to that, I would say, perhaps in archer words than the ones that have been chosen by Henrik and his wife, if you sucked dicks to become a personality of the dissident right, that's on you. It's your problem. As Henrik says, if your job is to produce YouTube videos, why would it cross your mind that you have to sleep with a guy to become a YouTube star? You know how YouTube works. It's all about whether you can get the views, the thumbs up, and the audience. Why would you go on a casting couch to be a personality in the dissident right? And what it leads me to conclude simply is that these two girls have had sexual encounters that they now regret, so they have reconstructed them in their head as, I was doing it for the dissident right. I wanted to be a dissident right personality and I've been exploited. There's no such thing as a casting couch to become a YouTuber, because you can just start publishing videos and build a following of your own. In the end, what seems to be happening is that these girls have a too promiscuous sexual lifestyle, and then they regret it, and then they complain against the dissident right. Fuck off. And you can become a YouTube star if you can produce quality content. Firestarter says, wait a sec, which ones did Casting Couch? Well, it seems that Lauren Southern and Ashton are both talking about... Ashton is the one that comes with the word casting couch. She says, there is absolutely a casting couch for the dissident right. But Lauren Southern says it in other words. She says, there is exploitation. And it all seems related to a guy who apparently was also dating the daughter of Jordan Peterson at some point. And as Henrik points out, this guy is not even in the dissident right. So if you slept with this guy to become a star of the dissident right, you've misfired. Sorry. Russia announces new military units on western border over Finland-NATO bid. So expansion of the presence of the Russian army on its western front. Understandable given the provocation. The mainstream media is salivating at the idea of sending missiles to sink the boats of Putin. U.S. missiles could end Putin's food blockade. The United States is considering sending Ukraine advanced anti-ship missiles to sink Russian war vessels in the Black Sea and end the Kremlin's naval food blockade. They're doing it again. 2 weeks ago, they were like, oh yeah, we want to brag that we helped the Ukrainians sink that ship. And then they were like, oh no, 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 we didn't help. It was all the Ukrainians. And now they're like, oh, maybe we could sink some more ships because food emergency, of course. Our governments lack so much balls, lack balls so much that they cannot just say, all right, let's go at war. They have to use this passive-aggressive approach of, oh, there's a food emergency. We have to do something. We're doing it for the poor. There's people who are lacking food because of this war. Anyway, it's pretty weak as a way to attack Russia. Cameron Mahon sends a super chat. He says, what if an AI was programmed to select a sperm cell with ideal traits aside from sex? By reading their DNA. For example, an AI that selects sperm cells that are less likely to produce babies with genetic disorders. Surely this would amount to the same effect as genetic engineering. As I make the point in my book, The Revolutionary Phenotype, I've been answering these questions in my head before writing the book, and I've been answering these questions publicly since the publishing of the book. There is a difference between selection and printing. And as far as we know, you have to print the genes for a phenotypic revolution to happen. Because here's what happens. When you start selecting the sperm cell, you're selecting 23 different chromosomes, basically. Out of what? Well, each of the chromosomes, you would either have selected that one, or you would have selected the alternate one. So you're imposing a very small resolution selection on the sperm cells there. You're really saying, all right, out of grandma's genes and grandpa's gene, I will select them in a package of 23 chromosomes, and I will give preference to grandma here and grandpa here. And I'll do that 23 times. That's ultimately a very small amount of decision-making evolutionarily. And what would happen evolutionarily is simply that there are certain lines that would be eliminated and certain lines that would survive. And that would not constitute a phenotypic revolution, precisely because there are branches that would survive. As long as there are branches that survive, and the independent life form has not attained an independent existence, independence from the original replicator, you're not in a phenotypic revolution. You are doing just a very weird set of natural selection pressure. Dapting Thomas says, Jeff, do you think there is value for someone to test TRP using evolutionary algorithms/models? Very often, you know, these models are abusive in the detail and uninformative in the greater picture. But certainly, if algorithms can be used at something, certainly there are lots of things to explore in the question of phenotypic revolutions. But my question is, are algorithms and models ever useful? Because they, most of the time, these things are really informing you about how you conceive of things. Basically, in a model, I don't see a response from the world. I see an illustration of the world that exists in the scientist's mind. The way you design the model will set your findings. So in general, I don't like models, although arguably I have a PhD in computational neuroscience because it was my most advanced class during my PhD days. Arguably, I'm a specialist of this domain, but I don't like models. I think the model world has been over-promising and under-delivering. A quick review of Hassan Piker's White People Do Not Exist. This will be our last item. Let's hear what he has to say.
My friend believes in the Great Replacement without realizing. How do I convince him out of it? That is an unfortunate reality.
How is it that I don't have the video? So maybe let's try Microsoft Edge. It seems that my Google
My friend believes in the Great
Replacement really needs a reset. Okay. So let's watch the video on Microsoft Edge.
My friend believes in the Great Replacement without realizing. How do I convince him out of it? That is an unfortunate reality for many people. The best thing to ask people when they believe in the Great Replacement is why they believe people are being replaced and who they're...
So we believe that people are getting replaced because we observe the increasing proportion of non-whites in America since the 1970s up to today, and the increasing representation of non-whites with respect to whites. This fact is not only unquestionable, but is being celebrated by the left. So I don't know of anyone who has ever argued that white people are increasing their proportion in America at this moment or at any moment in the last decades. Do you, Hassan? No, you don't. So you are one of those people also who has no factual counter to the fact that white people, that is, people of European descent, are decreasing in proportion of their representation of the US population. That is what we mean by replacement.
Who they're being replaced with and what that replacement looks like. And they'll.
That replacement looks like that you end up from a vast majority of white people in America, more than 90% in the 70s, to a white minority within the next few years. So that's what it looks like in terms of a replacement.
People often say white people are being replaced. That's the entire point of this, right? Legacy Americans is what Tucker Carlson says, but they'll usually say it's white people at the underlying, like the ultimate people that are being replaced are the white people. There is no such thing as white people. I'm white.
There is such a thing as white people, and you are not white as far as my definition is concerned. Here's what white people are. If you take the genes of everyone and you take all of their distinctive genetic characteristics and you give them to an algorithm and you tell the algorithm, please group all of these people by their similarity, trying to put those who are closest genetically together and those who are furthest apart genetically separate on the graph. A totally arbitrary algorithm that doesn't know at all your evolutionary history or ancestry will come up with a graph like this. And then we can change the color of the points ourselves because the algorithm didn't know that those are the Jews, those are the South European. The algorithm just classified these genetic characteristics and grouped them together. And you can see that there is a pattern emerging. This pattern is that the points that are of the same color tend to aggregate together, which means that the algorithm detects these people as legitimately closer to each other than they are of the rest of the graph. So you say there is no such thing as white people. I say white people is this right here. And for some people, they may have a largest definition that includes South Europeans. But generally, when we say white Europeans, we're talking about this genetic cluster here with more restrictive definition of Northern European right here. You, Hassan, are a Turkish person, and therefore you are right here. So although your skin may be white, you are definitely detectable as distinct from the genetic nuclei of white Europeans, which lie right here. The blue triangles right here are the Turks, which is why I've always said the Turks are not in the cluster of European genetics. That's it. You're not white, as you claim in that video.
My skin is white. There's the paleness of your skin that makes you white, which is like...
No. It's all about the genetics I've shown.
What we see and what we think of when we think of white people. But the real white people concept is a political one. One that was...
No, that's your view of what white means. I've expressed my view, and this is what you should debunk. My view is that... I'm going to change my sound a little bit. Hello? Okay. My view is that the genetic cluster represented by Europeans is what white means. Now, you can have your own interpretation of the term, but then you're playing on alternative definitions. So you haven't shown that white people do not exist. At best, you would have shown that you have your own definition of whiteness, which doesn't exist.
Was deliberately crafted to justify racial subjugation to black people. It started.
The concept of us as European people does not necessitate slavery of any kind. In fact, there is no enslavement of any African in my entire ancestry line. From here in Quebec, back to France, back to the tens of thousands of years that have led to our definition as a people. There is not one of my ancestors that has enslaved any African. So what you are talking about here is a leftist revisionist view of the concept of whiteness, which hasn't even been historically proven. It's really a modern conception. You've made it up in your head that people in the past needed whiteness to enslave people, which is false in the face of the fact that there were people who were white and who were enslaved. And there were also black slave owners. So clearly, the idea of slavery didn't require whiteness at all.
All the way back with the one drop rule, in an effort to make sure that there was a differentiating factor between the people that were being subjugated, between the people that were forced into slavery, because if you recognize that the people that you were in...
False, because there were white slaves and there were black slave owners.
Enslaving were real human beings, then all of a sudden that gets into tricky moral territory for a lot of people who are going to say, that's not a good look, sweaty. You're kind of enslaving human beings. That's where whiteness comes from. And I'm not...
Nope.
I'm not talking about whiteness like I'm white, you know, the pale, my pale skin. I'm talking about whiteness as a dominant political faction. When people talk...
Well, whiteness as a political faction is your definition, but by the definition of genetics... You are not white. I wanted to show again the graph. This is not a political statement. This is a definite, naturally existing distinction between genes of different people.
Talk about white, there's two different kinds of white. What I'm specifically talking about is whiteness as a political tool, as a political...
Well, that's what you're talking about, but then... You're talking about something we're not talking about, because I don't care about the political definition of whiteness. I care about the genetic nuclei that represents Europeans.
Concept. It is one way to conceptualize power. And that's precisely why that in-group, because it's...
That's Freudian Marxist crap.
Whiteness is only defined by what it's not. Whiteness is only defined by its proximity to blackness.
False. I've just defined it by what it is. So if you want a positive definition, you have to listen to the people who have a positive definition.
Whiteness is only defined by capturing power and being the dominant in-group in this circumstance. When people say white culture, that's precisely what they're talking about. That's why there is nothing really identifiable about white culture in particular, other than like memes like, lol, eating mayo, putting raisins in potato salad, that sort of shit, not being able to dance. Those aren't real tangible white culture things. A part of the reason...
Well, here are tangible aspects of white culture, starting with the American Constitution. Couldn't have arisen in any other world than a world populated by white people. Hello, Mama JF, what's up?
Oh my god, with his new look, he looked like Infoman.
He looks like Infoman, who is a leftist comedian from the state in Canada. Jean-René Dufort.
He's leftist.
No. Well, yeah, he's, I mean... The thing is, when we were young, you and I, we could watch Jean-René Dufort and have fun, precisely because he was irreverent. But when it boils down to it, when you see who he's been favoring in his coverage and being kind to, you realize that he's totally within the system. He's not a revolted punk against the system. He's totally in hand in hand with federalism.
Yeah, I don't know today. Like, what does he think about Maxime Bernier?
I'm sure he hates it.
You think so?
Yes.
Because in Quebec, you have no choice. It's all leftist. So it's, you have no choice.
Yes.
But, yeah, but Hassan looked like him now.
Yeah, Hassan, because of the long hair, looks like this Quebecois journalist. All right. And here's another aspect of European culture. This kind of streets and walls wouldn't emerge in a nation that is not white. It's long to explain exactly why, but the architectural care, that's an image from a Dutch street. The architectural care, the whole culture, by the way, of fine cheeses, fine wine, and you'll tell me that there are other countries that produce wine that aren't white. Yes, but it's not good. And same thing for cheese. Yes, but it's not good. Those are all architecture, religion, development of fine, refined cheeses and wines. All of this comes from white culture. The American Constitution, the way we celebrate certain European traditions, including Christmas. The way we celebrate Christmas is simply not comparable to non-white nations. Now, you can get a bunch of black people in America celebrate Christmas in the same way white people do, but that's cultural appropriation. Those are defining elements of white culture, and you are absolutely wrong that there are no such defining aspects. That's why, by the way, European countries attract so many migrants. It's because these distinctive features of a European nation, which include also low crime and high trust, are so desirable for people around the world that we are the primary destination for migrants.
Why I also mention this is because there is no such thing as like, I'm a white person and whiteness needs to be protected, because you're not a white person. You're Irish. You're not a white person. You're Polish. Every white person in this country, pretty much every white person in this country, knows exactly what their lineage is. They can trace.
That is a fallacy to believe that a subcategory denies the greater category. So it's not because you know that you're Irish that it denies the fact that you're European, that you're genetically European. It's not because you know that you're French that suddenly you're not white anymore. So that is a special form of the fallacy of composition. It's really a non sequitur. It's a non sequitur because the fact that you are French does not imply the fact that you're not European. So that is absolutely fallacious. It would be like saying the fact that you're a Ferrari makes you not a car. No, you're a Ferrari and you're still a car.
trace their ethnicity back. They can trace their culture back to their great, 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 great grandfathers, right? Now, the opposite of that for Black culture is not true. That's why Black culture is something that is defined, that you can point to, that you can talk about with its art and with its cultural signifiers. There are tangible things.
So suddenly it is okay to have Black culture, but that's because they've been oppressed. Well, that is an absolute fallacy, and it's a leftist fallacy. The idea that the facts about culture and genetics change because of a moral lens applied to it. It doesn't matter why people identify to something, why people want to belong to a group. All that matters really is whether that label is arbitrary, and in which case it's not necessarily illegitimate. You can have an arbitrary identification. You could say, hey, JF, I feel like I'm a fan of the Canadiens of Montreal. And maybe there's no fact in the universe that make you such a fan, but I would still respect this identity of yours as such. Now, with race, it's actually more than this. The facts, the natural facts of the world, including genetics, come to confirm our feeling of identity. So not only do we have a legitimate feeling of identity, and we don't need to have been oppressed in the past for it to be legitimate. That's your leftist fallacy. That's seeing facts through a moral lens. But on top of it, we wouldn't even need to feel European, that the genes, the genetic analysis would come to tell us that we are European, whether we want it or not. So I will stop the review of the video because he goes on into his whole theory of whiteness as a political concept, and that's Marxist bullshit. But at least I have debunked the lies that were present at the onset of the video. Hassan Piker, you are absolutely incorrect. You are making fallacies all over. All of this to deny a very simple fact that European people exist. And that it really doesn't matter what you think about it. The facts are there to show that we exist. And even if the facts weren't there, our will alone to be considered and to consider ourselves European would suffice to justify our association and our conscience as such. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much for those who are sending super chats and supporting the show. Thanks to Artemis, Fractal Man, Silver Spider, Cameron, many others. The other was Sensum Communem. Thank you very much for supporting the show. And if you don't watch the show live and you want to support us, you can also use the Patreon or the Subscribestar. We do a private show for the supporters at the $20 level, so don't hesitate to join. Much love, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.